lobbying and representing different groups.
The hour of 10:15 having arrived, we will call the tax committee meeting to order. We do not quite have a quorum yet. As soon as we do, we will break in and take care of some housekeeping issues. We have one bill before us today. It's House File 1849, a David's bill, solicitor definition provided for nexus purposes relating to taxation. We'll be taking some, we'll have a brief overview by a nonpartisan House research, Mr. Michael and Ms. Dalton, to describe the bill. And as I said, when we do actually have a quorum, we will break in to take care of some business. The first question I'd like to ask, and we will be, we have floor session at noon, so we will be adjourning for the day sometime prior to 11:45, so we've got some time to get over to the House floor in good order. My first question for members of the audience, is there anyone here that has driven more than 50 miles? So I know Mr. Drury from Fountain, Minnesota is here to testify. Is there anyone else? Because I want to respect the time that people have taken to come in from a distance. Before we get started, I'd like to introduce my county commissioner, past president of the AMC, commissioner from Fillmore County, Dwayne Bucky, is with us here today. So please welcome him. Okay, we will start when we have a quorum. I'll be moving House File 1849. Members, we will not be taking amendments today. We will not be voting on the bill today. I think we've got plenty of folks that wish to testify in support of and some that actually have concerns about the bill. Okay, who would like to start, Mr. Michael or Ms. Dalton? Ms. Dalton from House Research, if you could please tell the committee and the folks in the audience what my bill does.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House File 1849 is essentially what people commonly refer to as an Amazon bill. It is modeled on some language that has passed in the state of New York and several other states. Retailers with a physical presence in the state have a duty to collect sales tax under current law, and our current statutes define physical presence to include an affiliate agent, salesperson, canvasser, or solicitor operating in the state. What this bill does is it provides a definition of solicitor, which includes residents in the state who directly or indirectly refer potential clients to out-of-state to remote sellers through an internet website or similar link for a commission or other consideration. It has a presumption that a retailer has nexus if total receipts generated through these internet referrals operated by Minnesota residents exceeds $10,000 in the last 12-month period, and it does provide a rebuttal process to this presumption similar to the rebuttal process that is in the New York law.
Thank you. Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chair, I believe you also wanted to know a little bit about what has been passed in other laws.
Yes,
in other
that's what
states.
I'd like to know, Mr.
So,
Michael.
There is a handout in...
you're still on this one, Ms. Dalton? Okay, please proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm going to go through a little bit of what's gone on in the other states. Mr. Michael is going to actually talk about some of the court cases that have been associated with the bills that have passed in the other states. And then I will finish up just talking a little briefly about what the federal legislation is that also deals with this.
Thank you, Ms. Dalton.
The basic reason that we're all dealing with this issue is because in Quill Corporation versus North Dakota, the Supreme Court ruled that a business must have a physical presence in the state for a state to require that seller to collect sales tax. However, the court explicitly stated that Congress can overrule that decision through legislation. For the last several years, as retail sales have grown in the various states over the internet, an attempt has been made at both the state and federal level to impose a duty to collect on remote sellers. You have a memo for me that basically provides the overview, and then you have a second memo that talks about some of the court cases.
Ms. Dalton, right there, we do have a quorum. I'll officially call the meeting of the House Tax Committee to order. Representative Davney moves the minutes of May 21st. Any additions or corrections to the minutes? Seeing none, all in favor say aye to the Dabney motion.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Please proceed, Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, as I stated earlier, in April 2008, the state of New York enacted legislation very similar to what's being proposed here. It basically presumes that certain individuals and organizations that collect commissions for soliciting sales for remote sellers through websites and blogs are affiliates of the vendor and therefore provide a physical presence for the vendor. Amazon, when the bill was passed, Amazon immediately took the state to court. And as I said, Mr. Michael will be discussing some of the court cases. That case, I believe, is still in litigation. Eight other states, which are listed on a table on page 2 of this memo, have passed similar legislation. Most of them use the same threshold of $10,000 in annual sales. Pennsylvania has adds an additional threshold. It says it must be solicitation. I'm not sure exactly how Pennsylvania defines solicitation. Most of these bills, including our bill, or the bill being introduced here, has a rebuttable presumption. And then those are the effective dates. Most of them became effective were passed and became effective last year. A couple of states, Vermont and California, have kind of interesting effective dates. California essentially delayed their effective date until September of this year because Amazon has agreed to help go forward and get federal legislation passed that would address this at a national level. Vermont passed theirs but said that theirs is effective when 15 other states adopt similar language. Other approaches have also been tried by the states to impose the duty to collect sales taxes on internet sellers. One, in 2003, South Dakota passed a rule prohibiting public corporations from doing businesses with vendors that do not collect the sales and use tax. So in other words, the state cannot make purchases from any vendor who is not collecting their sales tax. Which means any remote seller, unless they voluntarily register. And if they voluntarily register, then they would be collecting throughout the state. Couple of states, Colorado, South Dakota, and Vermont, also enacted laws requiring remote vendors to provide information about the use tax to buyers. So they have to put on their website or on their invoices a notice to the purchaser that you owe use tax in the state. Colorado law actually went even further than that and required the remote vendors to send informational returns to customers with large purchases and also provide the same information to the Department of Revenue. That has been challenged in court, and as I said, Mr. Michael will talk about that one as well. And finally, a number of states, probably the most famous one being Texas, have claimed nexus based on related facilities owned by subsidiaries, warehouses and research facilities. In some of these cases, most notably South Carolina and Tennessee, Amazon has negotiated agreements with the state to delay collecting payments based on those that physical presence of their subsidiaries, and in return have made commitments to build new facilities in those states. In Texas, which basically went forward and presented Amazon with a bill based on the fact that they had a warehouse in the state, Amazon closed the warehouse and is basically contesting the $269 million tax bill that they received from the state of Texas. I will let Mr. Michael talk about the court cases.
Mr. Michael, if you could proceed, and then members will ask questions when they've wrapped up their presentations of both Ms. Dalton and Mr. Michael. Mr. Michael.
thank you, Mr. Chair. Joel Michael from House Research. There is a separate handout In your packet on the court cases, that looks like this. It's 5 pages long. I will allay your fears immediately. I am not going to go through it. But essentially what it does is summarizes 3 court cases that relate to these laws, or one of them actually doesn't relate to a law, but I'll discuss that Ms. Dalton just talked about. All I intend to do is to give you a very high-level thumbnail of the what was involved in the cases and the resolutions. The issues here are fairly complex, as you can imagine, with typical constitutional legal issues, and I don't think it probably is worth getting down into the weeds unless you have questions. The first case is the Amazon case in New York, which is probably the most relevant because it was a challenge to a law that is very similar to House File 1849. House File 1849's language is patterned on the New York law, and as Ms. Dalton indicated, almost immediately after the law was enacted, two of the large remote sellers, Amazon.com and Overstock.com, immediately filed an action in New York courts challenging, seeking a declaratory judgment, essentially that the law was unconstitutional and that it violated the Commerce Clause, the Due Process Clause, and the Equal Protection Clause. The basic issue or argument here is, to put this in sort of a Commerce Clause background, is the activity that the state law is characterizing as granting nexus, is that activity that under a line of cases that predates the National Bellis, Hess, and Quill case, does that rise to the level of being in-state solicitation? There are lines of cases, probably the best one to focus on is a case called Scripto. Scripto, those of you who go back may remember that there were a line of writing instruments made by a company called Scripto. That company was based in Georgia. They had independent contractors going around to retailers in the state of Florida trying to convince them to carry their line of pens. I can't remember. There were more than 10 solicitors in Florida. And then they also made sales directly. The U.S. Supreme Court in that case said having independent contractors going into the state of Georgia and soliciting retailers to buy to carry their line of goods was sufficient to create nexus. By contrast, the other line of cases are the National Bellis, Hess, and Quill cases that Pat talked about. And in that case, Quill, for example, is a big marketer of office products, and their only contact with the state of North Dakota was to send advertising flyers and to, have telephone contact and the sorts of things that you would characterize as basically advertising. So the issue with a law like the New York law or what's proposed in House File 1849 are the in-state activities that that the law focuses on, do those rise to the level of being solicitation the way they were in the Scripto case, or is it more like just plain advertising? What the trial court in New York concluded was the law, which creates a presumption and that can be rebutted, concluded that yes, this essentially focuses on solicitation, not on advertising, and therefore under the Quill and Scripto cases, it's a valid exercise, and so they dismissed the complaint by Amazon and Overstock. That got appealed to the Court of what's called the Appellate Division, which is the equivalent to our Court of Appeals in New York, and the court there agreed with the trial court that on its face, they couldn't say that the statute was unconstitutional. But as it was applied, they weren't so sure, and so they remanded it back. Now, one important thing to point out about the Appellate Division decision was that a big part of their rationale were some administrative rulings by the New York Department of Taxation and Finance that construed and, in my judgment, narrowed the scope of the New York statute. In particular, what it did was it said, pay a flat fee click-through doesn't qualify. That's not something that the statute reaches. Instead, it has to be a commissioned-based compensation system. So it would have to be somehow related, presumably as a percentage of the sale price. Secondly, they said, look, if you can overcome the presumption if all you're doing is in-state advertising. And third, and probably most important, in a separate release, they created a state harbor, a safe harbor, for how you can satisfy rebutting the presumption. And that safe harbor was essentially if you entered into an arrangement with all of your in-state associates, in Amazon's terms, or affiliates in Overstock's terms, that prohibited them from doing anything more than what would be construed as advertising, then you satisfy the presumption and you're not required to collect the tax. So all of those things played a role, those administrative rulings that go sort of beyond the literal language of the New York law, played a ruling in their decision to say, hey, this does not facially violate the Commerce Clause. So that's sort of a thumbnail of what happened in New York, and it's probably the most important case to focus on for your evaluation of House File 1849. And as Pat says, that case is still in litigation. The plaintiffs wanted to get review by the New York's highest court, which is the Court of Appeals. I believe that I couldn't find any decision that's been granted, so I think it's back in the Supreme Court of New York, which is their trial court. There are two other cases in the materials that I'll talk briefly about. The first one relates to North Carolina. North Carolina has made a variety of efforts to try to collect more tax from remote sellers. They enacted a law just like New York's law, but that's not what's involved with this, because just like all of the other states that have enacted laws like New York, the first thing that Amazon and Overstock and these other internet sellers did was to immediately cancel their arrangements with their local affiliates and associates. And that sort of moots the North Carolina law in a sense, except to the extent that it would be retroactive. But what North Carolina did was a second step and said they actually sent an information request to Amazon and said, we're going to audit you on your sales tax liability that you didn't collect, and send us information about all of the sales you've made into North Carolina over a period of time. Amazon complied with that request and sent them details on all of the sales they made. You know, what product was sold, what the address was, and a variety of other information, but they did not identify who the purchaser was. And the reason why North Carolina was doing this was not because they thought they could actually get Amazon to collect tax, but they wanted to find out who Amazon's buyers were. And once they found out who Amazon's buyers were, then they could send them bills for use tax. So then once North Carolina got that information from Amazon, they realized, well, this doesn't really do us enough good, because, okay, we know all of the products you sold, we know what counties you sold them into and all of that sort of thing, but we don't know the names of the buyers. So then they made a request to Amazon to give us the identity of your buyers. Tell us exactly who it was that made these purchases. That caused Amazon to file suit in the federal district court in the state of Washington to prevent that, to get essentially a declaratory judgment that request from North Carolina was prohibited basically by the First Amendment. And their argument was that you already know all of the books and all of the DVDs and all of the CDs that these purchasers have made, not just that you bought X dollars of books and X dollars of DVDs, but actually that you bought this book and this DVD and so forth. And that if they were then in turn to provide the names of the buyers, that would violate the First Amendment, because the First Amendment protects essentially the anonymity of, book buyers, so that you can't have the government sort of looking over your shoulder and saying, oh yeah, you bought, these books, and therefore were, going to start, being suspicious of you or something like that. And in that case, the Washington District Court, and they also said, oh, you also violated a federal law that prohibits this kind of disclosure by vendors of, of materials. And the Washington District Court and the ACLU and a bunch of individual Jane Doe plaintiffs also intervened, making similar kinds of claims. And the upshot was that the Washington Federal District Court agreed with Amazon and essentially issued a declaration that their request for this information was prohibited by the First Amendment. Now, interestingly, which I didn't put in the materials, one of the things that the court did say was, hey, if you had agreed to erase all of the information that you have about the exact book titles and DVD titles and so forth, then maybe it would be okay. I think, in my judgment, it's not clear that that would really work, but there are some sort of questions about that. So that's the second case. The third case is the Colorado case, and this goes sort of one step farther than North Carolina. As Pat indicated with the Colorado law, Colorado essentially enacted a statute sort of like what North Carolina was trying to do administratively. The Colorado statute says for remote sellers that aren't collecting the tax locally, you have to send a disclosure. You have to do three disclosures. One, you have to disclose to the individual purchaser, we're not collecting the sales tax, you owe the use tax with each sale that you make. That's probably not a problem. The problem was with the second two disclosures. The second one was if the purchaser bought more than $500 worth of stuff from that seller in that year, then you have to, at the end of the year, you have to send them an annual statement saying, you made purchases of, you know, X, Y, and Z equal to $1,000 or whatever, you're going to owe use tax. And, oh, by the way, we're going to inform the Colorado Department of Revenue that you made these purchases. The third disclosure was they had to send an equivalent sort of notice to the Colorado Department of Revenue so that then the Colorado Department of Revenue would obviously have the capacity to do use tax audits on these individual purchasers and could send them notices and say, hey, we know that you bought taxable materials from sellers outside the state and therefore pony up your use tax to the state of Colorado. The Direct Marketing Association, which is a trade association of remote sellers, went to the Colorado District Court and said, hey, this Colorado statute violates the Commerce Clause because it treats in-state sellers more favorably than out-state sellers. And the reason why it treats in-state sellers more favorably is they don't have to report any of this stuff. They're not even subject to this law. And so you're subjecting out-of-state businesses to something that in-state businesses aren't subject to. And so therefore that discriminates against interstate commerce and it imposes an undue burden on interstate commerce. The Federal District Court agreed with that argument and basically invalidated the law. I personally think that decision may not be the last word on this because essentially what it does is ignores that in this case the in-state businesses actually have to go through the process of collecting the tax, which is more burdensome than this reporting requirement that out-of-state businesses have to go through. And I think a reasonable argument can be made that those two businesses are not situated equally, and that in fact the out-of-state businesses are getting potentially a better deal. And secondly, the purpose of the legislation, well, let me back up and say the usual concern about Commerce Clause is to prevent protectionism. In other words, you don't want to favor in-state businesses and disadvantage out-of-state businesses. That's what, you know, part of what our Constitution was all about. The Confederation of States didn't work because states set up tariffs, and if you got something that's sort of like a tariff, it ought to be invalidated. But this really is pro-competition in the sense that it tries to put out-of-state businesses more close to on the same footing as in-state businesses. So I'm not convinced that this is the final word on the Colorado law if another state were to try it. And I will say, I think my understanding is that the Multi-State Tax Commission has a project where they're trying to develop a model statute that's sort of modeled on the Colorado law. But, okay, that's the three cases. I'll go back to Pat now.
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, basically, I think from the summary you've gotten from both Joel and I, it becomes clear that trying to deal with this whole issue of the internet taxation at the state level has been very problematic and very difficult. Finding language that both works, that doesn't cause internet sellers to change their behavior, i.e., get rid of their affiliates in the state, and find a way to actually collect these taxes. So the states have actually gotten together and tried to make it easier for the federal government to deal with this on a national level. And the way they've done that is through the Streamlined Sales and Use Tax Agreement. The state is one of 21 states that is part of that agreement, where we have simplified the administration and the definitions and a lot of different aspects of our sales tax law in an attempt to encourage the federal government to take action. The first action that was actually proposed at the federal government level was in July of 2010. It was H.R. 5660, proposed by Representative William Delahunt. It was called the Main Street Tax Fairness Act. The Main Street Fairness Act. The bill was actually under development for several years, mainly working with the members of the Streamlined Sales Tax Agreement. And the bill imposed the duty to collect on remote sellers only in the states that were in compliance with the Streamlined Sales and Use Tax Agreement. The bill never made it out of committee. It raised a lot of issues regarding a number of concerns on issues such as vendor allowances, small seller exemptions, and the implication of nexus for other taxes. That bill died. However, there are now three bills that have been introduced in Congress in the past year, all trying to deal with the same issue. There's a table on page 3 of the memo that provides a very quick summary of the three bills. They are the Main Street Fairness Act of 2011, introduced by Representative Durbin in the House and Senator Connors in the Senate. This is the only bill that's been introduced in both the House and the Senate. The Marketplace Equity Act, which is been introduced in the House by Representative Womack and 28 other representatives. This is the bill that has the most bipartisan support. It has been introduced. It has authors from both sides of the aisle. And then the most recent one, which is the Marketplace Fairness Act, which was introduced in the Senate by Senator Enzi and others, including Senator Representative Durbin has actually agreed to this bill, but it has not been introduced into the House yet. Each of the bills deals with where the duty to collect would be imposed. In the Main Street Fairness Act, it would be, again, in only the states that are part of the Streamlined Sales Tax Agreement. In the Marketplace Equity Act, the bill does not reference the Streamlined Sales Tax Agreement, and instead it actually sets up a different set of simplification requirements that a state would have to meet in order to have the duty to collect imposed in that state. One of the things that's a little troubling about it is that it's got a number of requirements that differ significantly from the Streamlined Sales Tax Agreement, and so being part of that agreement would not necessarily if that bill passed, being part of that agreement would not automatically mean that the duty to collect would be imposed on remote sellers in your state. And finally, the Marketplace Fairness Act, it would automatically, if that bill passed, it would impose a duty to collect on all SSUTA states. But it also provides an alternative, lists of simplifications, very similar to the simplifications that are in the Streamlined Sales Tax Agreement, but it doesn't include all of them. In particular, it doesn't include some of the definitional requirements requiring that every state define certain goods using very specific language. All of the bills have a small seller provision. Basically what this means is remote sellers with sales below a certain level would not be subject to the duty to collect. For the Main Street Fairness Act and the Marketplace Fairness Act, the exemption would be for any remote seller with annual sales of less than $500,000. For the Marketplace Equity Act, that would be $1 million. And it would also exempt collection in any state where the remote seller had less than $100,000 of sales in that state. So, again, it has a slightly different small seller provision. Regarding how Minnesota would fit into any of these three bills, generally speaking, Minnesota would normally fit into the Main Street Fairness Act because the state has been a member of Streamlined Sales Tax for a number of years. Actually, we were one of the first states to pass legislation to get in compliance with that. However, we have just been told in December of this year that we have two things that are keeping us out of compliance at this point, so there are some changes that we would need to make. One of them is very minor, and one of them has to do with our prepared food definition, and I prefer not to go into it if we don't have to. The Marketplace Equity Act, which is the act that has the criteria that's different from SSUTA, one of the things that it would actually require us to do is we would have to get rid of our de minimis exemption that currently exists when people do not pay sales tax directly and instead owe use tax. That would not be allowed under that bill. And finally, if the Marketplace Fairness Act passed, we would actually meet all the simplification requirements even if we are not in compliance with Streamlined Sales Tax, because the only thing we are not in compliance with Streamlined Sales Tax on are some minor definitional issues that are not required under that bill.
Thank you very much. I will have a few questions for members, and then we'll get into some testimony. Representative Bisgins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Michaels, forgive me if I simply missed this in your testimony, but what month and year was the Colorado law invalidated by the courts?
Mr. Michaels.
Mr. Chairman, I did not testify as to that. My recollection, it was in January, I think January of 2011.
Representative Bisgins.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. So about at least a calendar year. Mr. Michaels, do you know if during the testimony on whether to validate or invalidate the law, any testimony was given as to the fairness of the issue you brought up, that your local sales tax collectors had an equal, if not even more burdensome, responsibility in collecting the sales tax?
Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bisgins, I did not look at the briefs that were filed by the state. The court indicated that the argument that the state made in that case was, gee, our law, this reporting law applies to every business, including in-state businesses. But the court looked beyond that and said, yeah, on the face it applies to all businesses, but you're exempting businesses that collect the sales tax from it. And so the only in-state businesses that it applies to are the ones that aren't complying with the sales tax collection obligation, which is so trivial that this does favor out-of-state businesses. I don't believe that the state attempted to make the argument that I think would be a logical argument to make, which is, out-of-state businesses are differently situated than in-state businesses, and so therefore it's appropriate to have a different set of rules apply to them that are actually less burdensome than apply to in-state businesses. I don't think that argument was made, but I'm not absolutely sure because the court didn't mention it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Mr. Michaels, at my level of understanding this issue, I would agree with you that it seems like a logical argument to make. So I guess one more question, Mr. Michaels. Do you know if an appeal has actually been filed, or is it just a gut feeling that logically it seems like one should be filed?
Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chairman, I believe it. My understanding is an appeal has not been filed.
Thank you.
And I think Colorado is sort of going back to the drawing boards.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you.
We'll go Representative Loon, and then we're going to go into some testimony. Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Michael or Ms. Dalton, in addition to Colorado, I think, Ms. Dalton, you had mentioned South Dakota as one of the states that had passed notification of use tax being incurred by the consumer. Is that still in place, or is it similar to Colorado where those actions have been stayed?
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Loon, I believe what the South Dakota law is basically that they just have to put on their website, you owe use tax, or you may owe use tax. And that part of Colorado, I don't believe, has been invalidated either, because that part of the Colorado law was not challenged.
Thank you. And do you know if there's any information from those states as to whether what they believe to be under reporting of or under collection of use tax, if it's had any impact in putting those notices on?
Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, Representative Loon, I don't know that there's any research that has been done to indicate whether that has had any impact. I mean, there are other issues that go on. A number of states have done things like put use tax on their income tax statements in an effort to collect use tax from people on these remote sales. But and there is some information on some of that, but I don't know that there's any information specifically on this Colorado or South Dakota law.
Thank you.
Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, I would like to have some proponents of House File 1849 present some testimony, and then we'll give time. As I said, we're not voting on this today, and then I'll give some time, equal amount of time, to folks that have concerns. Mr. Brian Steinhoff, if you could please come forward. You have some people to bring with you. Welcome to the committee, sir. If you could introduce yourself and then who you have with you also, please.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Brian Steinhoff. I'm with the Minnesota Retailers Association. I have with me Mr. Mike Drury from Drury's Furniture and also Roberta Bonhoff from Creative Kids Stuff. They're a couple of members of ours. We also have a couple other members of ours that are going to be testifying, if that's okay with you, here in a little bit.
Are they for the bill?
They're for the bill.
Then it's fine.
Matter of fact, members and chairman, all of our members are for this bill. Matter of fact, this is our number one issue this year. It was our number one issue last year. It's very, very important to all of our members. And I'll be brief. We've talked a little bit about the nuts and bolts. We were here last year, so I want to be brief so you guys can hear from some real people and how this really affects their businesses. But I want to come from a point of representing large, medium, and small retailers across the state of Minnesota and say this isn't an issue for just the big box or just little or medium. It's an issue that affects all of them equally, and it's very important. You got to remember, our members are paying property taxes. They're employing people all over the state. They're, you know, sponsoring the Little League team, the hockey team, donating to Rotary, on their local chamber boards and things like that. They're selling the exact same products oftentimes as an online-only retailer is selling. However, in the tax code, the way it currently is, they get treated unfairly as our members have to collect and remit sales tax. So oftentimes that could put them, depending on where you live, 7% price disadvantage to an online-only retailer who is contributing really nothing to the state of Minnesota so far as tax dollars go, employment goes, philanthropy goes, and whatnot. So we're not really coming to you asking for special treatment at all, by any means. And we think internet sales are great. And most all of my members have a web presence. All we're asking for is equal treatment. So we can compete fairly with those online-only retailers. And online-only retailers are great, and they do wonderful things. And we want competition, and we love competition, but it should be an equal playing field. So that's where we're coming from. A sale's a sale. If one person's selling television, they have brick-and-mortar presence, and the other person's online only, why does one get special treatment over the other one? And I think that's where we're really coming to you from, is a fairness issue. We're asking you to support Minnesota businesses. We've heard a lot of talk about, you know, this year and last year, but we got to support jobs, and we got to support Minnesota businesses. We got to make a better climate here in Minnesota. This is one step to be able to do that. So I'll be brief. I want to let you talk and hear some real kind of stories of how this is affecting businesses throughout the state. So thank you, Chairman, members, and I'll stand back for a little bit. Mike, maybe you don't know, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Mr. Drew, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Chairman and members. My name is Michael Drury. I'm with a company called Drury's Furniture at Fountain, Minnesota. We're a very small town furniture store, kind of a big store, but in a very, very small town. The town is just 300 people. My grandfather started the business in 1925, and we've managed to continue since. The big challenge that we're talking about here, if you put yourself in my shoes, if you will, we work really hard to sell furniture, and we work closely with our clientele. We have salespeople and decorators that go out to the customer's home, do the measuring, bring the samples. I'm sure all of you as homeowners and consumers have experienced this process somewhere, buying furniture or home furnishings of some sort. It's a real touchy-feely kind of thing. You really have to come into a store and look at it. What's been happening is people do this whole selection process and then do the price comparing online, which I do not begrudge any competitor that has bricks and mortar that offers competitive prices. Where I get upset is the online retailers will take away business in large chunks by taking advantage of the tax situation. So this is not happening when people are buying small items. In my particular case, it happens in really large chunks. These are transactions of rooms of furniture that may range from $5,000 worth ticket price to $20,000, and the amount of sales tax on a sales ticket of that size becomes a big issue. If all of a sudden I am pricing my goods at exactly the same price as any competitor, an online competitor automatically has, for example, in the city of Rochester, an advantage of 7.2%, basically. That is more than what I can just deal with. It's, quite frankly, very, very unfair. We do what we're supposed to. You know, we collect the tax. We tell people they have to pay it. It's a tax that they owe. We go through that whole process with them. Sometimes they just don't care. If the seller is not collecting the tax, then quite often these people just really don't care. That's where it hurts. It comes at me in big chunks on large ticket sales. So we are a medium to high end furniture retailer in an unusual situation in a real small town.
Thank you, Mr. Drury. We'll go to the next testifier. If you please spell your last name for the record.
Will do. Mr. Chair and committee members, my name is Roberta Bonoff, B-O-N-O-F-F, and I'm the CEO and president of Creative Kid Stuff. We are a specialty toy retailer with 6 stores and an e-commerce site, so I've got both. And we've been doing business in the state of Minnesota for 30 years. We collect taxes, we pay taxes as required by law. Retail, in general, is a very competitive business. And you know what? That's what I do day in and day out. I'm not complaining about that, or I wouldn't be in the business. That's the game. But whether you're a bricks and mortar retailer or an e-tailer, every percentage point makes a huge difference. And every percentage point drops dollars either, you know, quite frankly, right to our bottom line. I just wanted to share a few statistics about my industry so that you can kind of understand the marketplace I live in. And I have to say their last year's 2011 isn't published yet. But I can't wait to get my hands on those. So Amazon, if I could just talk about them for a minute, is ranked 5th in the toy industry. In sales behind Walmart, Toys R Us, Target, and Kmart. They're all my competitor, particularly online, because I have that e-commerce part. Online sales in my industry represent 13% of all sales. If you look at just September to November in 2010 alone, online business increased 14%, while toy store business, bricks and mortar, rose 4%. Amazon in November, it had an increase of 40% with an overall year-to-date increase of 39%. I don't know another retailer who's moving at that kind of a volume. And I just think we have to look at that. It's not going away. Bricks and mortar and e-commerce are going to stay. It's just how the consumer is getting the product. No other retail sector, again, can report those kind of increases. How does this affect us? Price. The percentages of dollars that are not paid in taxes go right to their bottom line and increase their opportunity to market and also to run promotions on free shipping, as I'm sure you all saw during the fourth quarter, or if you have a if you're online or if you are on your iPhone, you will have seen those promotions go across. It lets them reduce prices on a consistent basis. When we research our own e-commerce site, we have what we call cart abandonment. And we can trace cart abandonment absolutely means that somebody was on our site, they were looking at a product, they liked the product, but then they left. And evidence can show, because you can track all that, they went and they did price comparisons, and more than likely they will go to one of our competitors where they don't have to pay taxes, or they were able to get that free shipping. So cart abandonment is actually an issue that we face all the time. And I think most recently, if you've been reading the newspaper, not only cart abandonment, but what you'll find is many retailers are tired of being a show place. So as they say, there's an app for everything, there is an app for everything. And the newest thing is that we are showplaces for the consumer. They come in with their iPhones, they can take a picture, they can snap the barcode, they can look on their iPhone and immediately price compare your product across all venues. So competition, bring it on, we get that. You know, that's what retailers do. But we just want the fair level playing field. We pay taxes. We, in our height, have over 200 employees. We have leases. And whether I'm paying real estate taxes or employee taxes or sales taxes, for 30 years we've been doing that in the state of Minnesota. And I don't just want to talk about price. Dropping off our bottom line. Bottom line is profitability. And we need everybody in this state. We need everybody to stay vital and be important in this state. You don't want bricks and mortar going dark. If you're in a community and you represent a community, any community, you know, we have a presence in Edina. So you're in Edina and you have a store, look at the mega community that Edina is with their Target Superstores, their Best Buys, the Galleria, Southdale. Things start going dark, all the other taxes that that is contributed by that community will go away. So it's not just a little issue, it's a big issue. Not collecting taxes, whether you're Amazon or anybody else, and really does what we call, it goes price surfing, garage sale retailing. That's something else that we have to do. People who decide to go and do a store literally out of their garages and ship product out of their garages because it's easier to do wholesale distribution right out of that, and they don't have to pay taxes. They don't have to file all the things that we have to file. And again, an unfair competitive advantage. I'm aware that Amazon has, as they have spoken, has gone so far to avoid this in other states by shutting down their affiliates. This brings a question to me, is what kind of a partner is Amazon anyway? And then to the affiliates, why would any one business have their company and an existence on one provider? I just have to question the business model. We collect taxes, we pay taxes. I have two people in my accounting department. And we do that. And I know Amazon has a lot more people in their accounting department. If Creative Kid Stuff continues to expand or expands its bricks and mortar, we will continue to pay taxes. And all I ask is that we take a step in the right direction and equal the playing field. If you're a retailer, you know it's competitive. You're in the business. You kind of, it's like we call it a little sickness. You thrive on it. But I just want to have an equal playing field so I can play the same as everybody else. And I think the other thing for me is business 101 since I've started running a company, is there's two things you don't play with. You don't play with people's payroll. You pay them, and you don't mess with your taxes. You pay your taxes. So, like I said, I would just appreciate a fair playing field. And I thank you for listening.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Drury, Steinhoff, or Ms. Bonoff? I've got Sarah Anderson and, or excuse me, Representative Anderson and Representative Deputy Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Bonoff, you had made a mention of garage sales. Is it your goal then to have sales tax charged on sales made at somebody's garage sale or yard sale? Or
nope. Okay, so.
Ms. Bonoff?
That's a really, really interesting. When I say garage sale retailing, what I'm saying is people who sell online. It's kind of a slang that we use in our industry, which is they've developed a business, they can easily put it online, and we call it garage sale because they don't actually have a warehouse or a presence, they literally ship it from their home, so garage sales are garage sales, the real things, I have them myself, but this kind of what's happening on the internet is totally a different thing, which it just allows people to get into business and not have to pay taxes.
Representative Anderson. Representative Depke.
Thank you very much. I have one question for Mrs. Bonhoff and one for Mr. Drury. Mrs. Bonhoff, I think it's great that you have both the retail sales and the online sales so that you can compare both. And my question relates to the shipping charges, because I know when you mentioned something about free shipping and sometimes you do free shipping. I would assume that there is a if somebody is truly going after something that is not a unique price, that they're looking for or a unique product, they're looking for a bargain, and that's why they're doing it. But when you shop online, you do have to pay shipping. What is your experience, and when you offer free shipping, do you get a spike in the sales of similar items on both in the store? Because the in-store customer obviously gets the satisfaction of getting that product right away, not being shipped to them, and they don't have to pay shipping charges. Are there anything special that you do that you could tell us about in that area?
I'm happy to share that. It's a totally, what it's called is an integrated marketing strategy, and yes, during the fourth quarter particularly, and oftentimes during the year, we will offer free shipping. Mm-hmm. That when we offer free shipping, the money that we lose on every single product that we ship for free, bottom line, goes right to our bottom line. I don't have extra percentage points that I'm not paying in taxes to buffer that. So when I choose to do that, I'm literally looking for, I'm going to look at a different, it's called gross margin, the difference between what I buy the product and I sell the product. That decreases for me. So, and I don't have anything called not paying taxes to buffer that. So it's just a pure business decision that I have to make on a day in and day basis. If whether the volume that I'm going to create by doing that will offset the margin or the dollars that I'm going to lose. So it's just it's a competitive business strategy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was thinking that the cost of a versus the furniture, and I'm really interested in Mr. Drury's comments as well, would maybe offset some of that because they do have to pay, you know, the shipping charges. But Mr. Drury, I know you don't have an online business, I assume, and are the shipping charges relevant between either the online business, your competitors there, or your company? Is that the same?
Thank you, thank you for the question.
Sure.
In my business, shipping is a really big deal, and it's real expensive. But the costs are all basically hidden. There's actually a movement in my industry for our suppliers that we buy the furniture from to build the shipping cost into the cost of the product so we don't have to deal with it. It just makes it easier for the retailer. So that's a great expense that most consumers never really see or hear about directly in my business because it's big items, it's more costly, it's in there. It's part of why furniture costs so much. But because of that, we're all equals there, whether they be bricks and mortar retailers like myself or the online retailers, the shipping cost doesn't come to you on a bill against your credit card. The shipping cost comes to me or whoever we're competing with. And the delivery cost is just part of something that consumers, home delivery, something that consumers expect. So we, at our level of business, we have to provide that. It really boils down to just the sales tax. that's the real difference, and that's really where the problem is, just that 6.8 or 7 point something percent sales tax. That's the true issue.
Thank you, Mr. Jury. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Knuth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this may be kind of a dumb question, but we just had the whole presentation on Commerce Clause and striking down parts of these laws, and Commerce Clause is meant so we don't protect in-state businesses, but we've clearly been protecting out-of-state businesses with our current law, and is there a way under the Commerce Clause to sue those businesses for having an unfair, you know, I don't even know how you do it, but it's kind of the reverse Commerce Clause, and I'm just curious if anyone has tried that around the country. And I don't know if you can answer that. It was probably better for our researchers, but...
Mr. Steinhoff?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I'm not under... It might be a better question for counsel to answer that.
Mr. Michael?
Above my pay scale.
Mr. Mike.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Knuth, there is, at the state level, there is no clear path to solving this problem. It really is a problem for a comprehensive, clearly successful solution has to come from Congress, basically, I think is the second response.
Representative Knuth. Okay, Mr. Steinhoff, you said you had some other folks that would like to testify.
Mr. Chair, we have two other members of our association that would like to testify also, if that'd be okay.
That'd be great. And if we could shorten them up a little bit, because we do want to get to some other folks who want to testify. Thank you, Mr. Drury, and thank you, Ms. Bonhoff. A question for Ms. Dalton quickly as we're switching folks out here. How many states have enacted some type of affiliate nexus law?
Mr. Chair, of the affiliate nexus, there are about six. There's eight states that have enacted affiliate nexus laws. There's a couple of other states who have done other things. But the affiliate nexus laws, there are eight.
There's eight. I thought there's like 14 or 15. We're not there yet.
Mr. Chair, there were 17 states that actually introduced legislation last year. So this is certainly something that is being looked at in other states as well.
Okay. Thank you. Please identify yourselves. Mr. Innes, do you want to take charge there?
Not really, Chair.
Okay.
I'm Ward Innes, representing Best Buy.
Mike Hiltner, Director of Government Relations for Best Buy.
I'm Chris Peterson. I'm a group manager at Target.
Okay, the middle gentleman there, can you spell your last name, please?
Sure, Hilter.
Okay. Thank you. Who'd like to start?
I can go ahead and start.
Yes, sir. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the Tax Committee, for the opportunity to be here to speak in support of Chairman David's e-fairness proposal, House File 1849. As most of you know, Best Buy is a retailer of consumer electronics, content, and related services. We're proud to call Minnesota home with our headquarters in Richfield. In fact, Best Buy started with just one store in St. Paul, Minnesota in 1966. Today, we operate 38 retail storefronts in Minnesota, about 1,400 nationally. We have four district offices here in Minnesota, a distribution center, a data center, a warehouse, a service center, and, of course, our corporate campus facility. Our total charitable giving last year nationally was $24.8 million, about $2 million in Minnesota. We have about 8,000 employees in Minnesota, and our brick-and-mortar stores help collect 83 million pounds of consumer electronics from folks and that we recycle to make sure we're recycled responsibly. And that includes about 4 million pounds of electronics right here in Minnesota. So we're proud of our presence here. And we're also a multi-channel retailer, which means we serve customers in-store, by phone, online at bestbuy.com, and through our mobile smartphone app. We collect and remit well over $100 million in sales tax revenue to the state of Minnesota annually through sales made through all of these channels, including our website. Our presence in Minnesota also includes our affiliate partner program, which is comprised of Minnesota affiliates who refer sales to our website, which then are paid a commission for referring those sales. And that's a lot like the activity that's described in House File 1849. For Best Buy, this issue is fundamentally about fairness. Like the other retailers you heard from, we too face a competitive disadvantage with large online-only sellers. who compete and participate here in Minnesota and sell the same taxable products to Minnesota consumers, but at the end of the day are not required to add the extra 7% sales tax to the transaction like we are. And I can tell you in the electronics business, the perceived tax savings from buying online oftentimes can be the deal breaker and the factor in where the consumer ultimately makes the purchase. Our stores do a fantastic job every day competing on price, service, and assortment, but we should not have to compete on the tax code. That's fundamentally unfair and effectively has the government picking winners and losers in the marketplace. Also in retail, jobs are directly tied to revenue, so we very much see this as a jobs issue. Make no mistake, e-commerce is an important selling channel for consumers and for retailers. However, we need to remember that the sales tax system was decided before e-commerce existed. Today, e-commerce represents 10% of all retail sales, or $250 billion in consumer spending, and it's growing rapidly. Best Buy strongly supports updates to the tax code that would place the same sales tax collection obligations on all sellers who participate and compete in Minnesota's marketplace, regardless of whether they sell through a storefront, a website, an affiliate seller, or all three. We have a sales tax collection system that was designed for an old brick-and-mortar world, and that's not the world we live in anymore. Quite simply, we need the laws to reflect how business is done today. We believe House File 1849 is an important step forward in ensuring Minnesota's tax laws reflect 21st century commerce and allow a fair chance for all sellers to succeed and grow jobs in Minnesota. We also believe, as important, this bill is an important signal to Congress that Minnesota has done all it can do to level the playing field, and it's time for the federal bill to be enacted. Sales tax is a state issue. Begins as a state issue. It ends as a state issue. We've got this. You know, the Supreme Court took this right away from the states in 1992, and hopefully the federal government and Congress will move the bill. But we think the state activity fundamentally is the momentum that's driving the federal bill. And the good news is there seems to be some real progress on that. Thank you again for the opportunity to share our support, and be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, first we'll go to Mr. Peterson representing Target, and we will go to questions after that. And we'll take Target's testimony then. Mr. Ines, did you want to make a few comments? Or?
Just a couple, please.
Okay, Mr. Peterson, then we'll go to Mr. Ines.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm Chris Peterson, and I'm a group manager of tax at Target. We appreciate the opportunity to testify today on this House File 1849, and we appreciate the opportunity to voice our support. Target is proud to call Minnesota our home. Our company's history dates back to our department store beginnings in the early 1900s. And since the first official Target store opened in Roseville back in 1962, the Target team in Minnesota has grown to over 27,000 strong. Target is committed to Minnesota, and as part of that commitment, we pride ourselves in giving back to the communities that help us grow. We donated a total of $36 million to communities throughout Minnesota in 2010 alone, not to mention the thousands of hours that our team members volunteer each year. We understand that we will not be judged solely on our commitment to Minnesota. Ultimately, consumer behavior is at the heart of retail. It shapes the industry. And today, that consumer influence is evolving at an unprecedented rate. Research clearly indicates that the lines between online and brick-and-mortar retail operations are blurring. Consumers expect a more consistent and seamless experience as they maneuver between the digital and physical retail world. Today, sales channels that were once separate and distinct are more integrated. The path of purchasing used to be very linear. Guests would read our weekly ad, go to the store and look at an item, and if they liked it, they would purchase it. Today, the consumer might consult more than 10 sources of information before making a trip. The moment of truth now occurs long before entering the store. Target is ready to compete in this new marketplace. As we expand to new areas of our business from Target.com, we can look to fairly compete with our retail counterparts, but that can only happen with a change to antiquated sales tax laws. Current tax law has the government picking winners and losers, with the losers being those that have made the largest investments in their communities. Target collected almost $133 million in Minnesota sales tax last year, and gladly does so as required by law. The problem is when certain retailers do not collect a tax that is due. Their competitive advantage can be 6-7% or more. This disadvantage stems from the 1992 Quill Supreme Court decision allowing retailers without a physical presence in the state to operate without the requirement to collect and remit sales tax. The marketplace today is far different than 1992. However, the Supreme Court has made it clear that Congress has to be the party to overrule that ruling. Because of that ruling, as retailers, we are limited in terms of the ways we can work to level the playing field. Determining affiliates represent a presence, as House File 1849 does, is one way we can begin to create fairness. It is important to mention that Target is not opposed to affiliates. We have affiliates. We have support 23 affiliates in Minnesota, along with many more affiliates across the country. Target is committed to Minnesota and the health of its economy. We will continue to invest in jobs and infrastructure, like our expansion in Brooklyn Park. Target does not want to be a showroom for online-only retailers. We want to compete fairly in this marketplace. Again, Target appreciates your willingness to address this fairness issue. Thank you again for the opportunity to speak to the committee, and I'm happy to take any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. We'll go to Mr. Innes, representing Best Buy, and then we'll go to member questions. Mr. Innes.
Chairman, members of the committee, I just want to amplify a couple points that I think have been made already, but I want to make it clear that this is not imposition of a new tax. The tax code is currently configured, requires people to pay the sales tax, sales and use tax, on any internet purchases. So this is truly a compliance issue. This is truly an administration of the current tax code issue. This is a collection issue. So if anybody tries to cloud the water about us attempting to impose a new tax burden, that is not the case. This is clearly a compliance, a collection, an administration issue. It's a state making its best effort to collect the taxes that are owed and bring fundamental tax fairness to Minnesota's tax system. I also like to make clear that there's no Minnesota business that is directly adversely impacted by passage of this law. If a Minnesota business is not required to collect sales tax currently, they won't be required when this law is passed. If they're not required to register with the Department of Revenue, they won't be required after this bill is passed. The only reason why we have Minnesota affiliates that have some concern about this bill is not because of the bill itself. It's because of Amazon's behavior and the reaction they have to the passage of this bill. Essentially, Amazon has come to every legislature that's talked about this issue and has basically said, if you dare bring integrity to your tax system, if you dare try to bring fundamental fairness and level the playing field, if you dare try to collect the taxes that are currently owed, we're going to discontinue our relationships with your Minnesota affiliates. And fortunately, more and more state legislatures are refusing to blink and cave to that threat. We're seeing more and more states step up to the plate and say, this is an issue of fundamental tax fairness. We're not going to, you know, blink when Amazon or Overstock or anybody else comes into our jurisdiction and tries to tell us how to enforce our tax code. So I think those are really key issues. We know that Amazon has struck a deal with California to begin collecting taxes in September of 2012, this year. If they can collect them in California, they can certainly collect them in Minnesota. We know Mitch Daniels recently struck a deal with Amazon to start collecting taxes in, I think, 2014. If they can collect them in Indiana, they can certainly collect them in Minnesota. It's just an important issue. We know that Streamline has been out there. Minnesota has been an active participant, been working on it for more than a decade. But the reality is Minnesota businesses need a lifeline, and this bill represents a lifeline to at least start incrementally leveling the playing field, making sure we have a playing field where everybody compete on an even basis and in a really a free market economy. That's the extent of my testimony, and be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and just a comment and then a question for Ms. Dalton. First of all, I just want to say thank you for the good business you do in Minnesota, and especially for your community giving that you do and that it's locally specific. A lot of good things about that, and I think you deserve commendation for that and recognition for that, and your points are taken to heart. Appreciate it very much. For Ms. Dalton, I'm just wondering, you know, in those eight states that have enacted this, we sometimes hear some of the materials we have, would it be possible to just get some information of what the estimates were and what the actual was and those who have implemented it, just as a matter of clarification to the impact? If that might be okay, Mr. Chairman?
Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, The Department of Revenue estimate for this bill is actually based on collection information for Illinois, which did enact this law last year. And so it gives some indication of, you know, what's happened. Clearly, these bills are not collecting the vast majority of sales tax owed on internet sales. The estimate of what we do not collect from remote sellers is in the hundreds of millions, whereas this will only generate about $5 million. Clearly the affiliate has an impact on this.
Okay, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Ms. Dalton. If there was any additional data, you've done a very thorough job of presenting a lot of information, but with the question from the chairman about how many have enacted it, if there was any history. But if that's already included, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Giffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Target and Best Buy, I am assuming that you are already selling goods on the Internet. You have an Internet site?
Yes.
Now, Mrs. Bonoff testified that about 13% of her business comes from Internet right now. How much of yours is through the Internet?
I believe that it is less at this point, less than 5%.
Okay.
I would have a more specific number that I could provide for the record. But I think it's important to note that that the Internet provides a multi-channel experience. So for the most part, most people who use Target.com use Target.com and then they go to a store and purchase an item. So you can't have one without the other. I mean, I think it goes to the whole multi-channel strategy.
Thank you. And Best Buy, what percent?
Mr. Chairman, members, our online business is about a $2 billion business. And we're a $50 billion revenue company, so whatever the percentage is. We've spent the last couple of years trying to meet the consumer where they want to be met. In our store, online, right here, and more people are shopping right here on their smartphone. And so we're meeting the customers in all those places, and in all those places we're collecting and remitting sales tax.
Thank you. I have one follow-up question, and that is if in fact this is a federal law and every online business is required to collect sales tax from every customer out of state, is that a major expense for you? Do you have to gear up for that? Is that going to be something that, you know, you're currently Minnesota businesses, but if this is a federal law, is this something that technology has kind of wiped away the issue that the old catalog marketers used to have? Is it really having to develop a particular system and spend millions of dollars on collecting from some states and not collecting from another? What is your take on that?
Well, I think for
Mr. Peterson,
I'm sorry. From Target's perspective, we have physical presence in 49 states already. Mm-hmm. So because of that, we are filing and remitting sales tax already to all these locations, and so the federal bill would have no impact on Target.
Representative Depke?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and for Best Buy.
Mr. Chairman, members, we similar to Target, we have nexus in every state with the sales tax, which is about 45. We're already set up to collect and remit, and we do in all these selling channels. We think, and our tax department would tell me that it is significantly easier than it used to be, just given the advent of software and the ability to use that and sort of plug it in and turn it on.
Mm-hmm.
We wouldn't have to do new sales tax collections by virtue of the federal bill, but our competitors, for the first time, would.
Mm-hmm. Right. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Peterson, what state doesn't have a Target?
The only state is Vermont. And we do have collected sales tax to Vermont, even though we don't have a physical presence. The only state is Vermont, and we do have collected sales tax to Vermont, even though we don't have a physical presence.
Vermont.
Outrageous. War. That's it.
Live free or die. Just so members know, there is a sale at Target. Pepsi products are 4 cases for $10, and I bought 12 cases last night, so if you need anything, just stop up. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Although Representative Depke has asked my questions, just a comment. When I shop at Target and Best Buy, which I do frequently, often your clerks will refer me to the Internet because Best Buy, for example, they tell me there's a greater selection online and you can get the sales much to your advantage. So just a comment to tell you that I think you have the best of both worlds.
Representative Runbeck.
I'll wait.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just briefly, I want to thank Mr. Ines and the testifiers for coming forward. They said it best that government should not be in the business of picking winners and losers. And looters as well. We should pick looters as well. Government should not be in the business of picking winners nor losers. And clearly right now in our current law, because of the world changing, we have a tax preference built into the system that is picking a winner. And obviously it would be much better if the federal government moved forward on this, but I want to thank the chair for bringing this bill forward and we can get something done this year.
Thank you. Any other questions for the testifiers? Representative Anderson?
Well, actually, Mr. Chair, it's for Ms. Dalton.
Ms. Dalton? Or Ms. Representative Anderson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Dalton, I'm wondering, with Illinois having this in place, have there been any studies done that can tell us if the prices for consumers has increased as a result of making that change?
Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I'm not aware of any, but I can certainly take a look, and if there are, I can get back to you with them.
That would be helpful.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Steinhoff, Ines, Hiltner, and Peterson, and Mr. Gary Carlson, if you could join us, please. And I would also say to the entire committee here, come down to Fountain, Minnesota, shop at Drury's Furniture, a premier furniture store in Fountain, Minnesota. Mr. Carlson, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Gary Carlson. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. And as we've testified in the past on the Streamlined Sales Tax Project and on the Affiliate Nexus proposals last year, we do support this legislation. And let me tell you that our position is that our cities are important economic development agents of the state of Minnesota. We do a lot to try to attract businesses, jobs, tax base to the state. And as we look and as our city officials have looked at the situation that currently exists, we think that this slants against our own local businesses, and we really think that in the interest of our state and in the interest of our jobs and tax base, that passing legislation like this, as well we support legislation at the federal level, H.R. 2701, H.R. 3179, the Main Street Fairness Act, and the Marketplace Equity Act. We think these would be very important steps for the state of Minnesota to maintain a viable and vibrant retail and local business environment. So, Mr. Chair, with that, I would stand for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Any questions for Mr. Carlson? I hope you'll have similar testimony on House File 1911 in a few days.
Mr. Chair, I'm glad I had an opportunity to speak on this bill first.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. And maybe Mr. Steinhoff could talk to me afterwards, but as I look at this, and we'll call up, do we have anyone else? Okay, if the folks from the chamber could please come down. And the business partnership. On the Mr. Steinhoff, I think it was someone from your group passed out the stand with Main Street where it has Best Buy, JCPenney, Target, Sears, and I understand how this bill affects all of them. But when I see the Chapel of Love, how does this bill affect that?
All of America retail.
That's right, it is.
But who's their competition?
Las
Vegas. We'll talk later. We'll talk later. The Chapel of Love. Okay, Mr. Hesse from the chamber and Ms. Larson from the partnership, if you could please present your testimony and just kind of where we're headed here, folks. We will give equal time to folks that have concerns. Is there anyone else that wants to testify on behalf of this bill? Because we do have floor session. Okay, then we'll have the chamber and the partnership wrap it up, and then we'll probably break, and we will give equal time to folks that have concerns at a later date. Okay, with that, who would like to start?
Mr. Chair, I will. For the record, my name is Tom Hesse. I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. We also wanted to add our support for House File 1849. Last year, the Chamber took a kind of a fresh look at our sales tax policy about this time of the year and really amended it to promote or support state efforts to promote the collection and remittance of sales tax by remote sellers or use tax by their customers. It was done basically to support this legislation. We've heard a lot of talk already about the unfairness in the tax code, and that's really what our position was designed to get at. So again, we think it's a needed step towards accomplishing a level playing field in Minnesota, and we fully support the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hesse from the Chamber. Ms. Larson from the Partnership, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jill Larson, I'm from the Minnesota Business Partnership. We want to add our support to the bill. I think the previous testifiers said it very eloquently. This is about leveling the playing field. This isn't about helping our Minnesota homegrown businesses stay competitive, be more competitive. These are businesses that pay their taxes here. They support their communities and the state in innumerable ways. And this is one step that the state can take to help out our Minnesota businesses and help them create more jobs. We understand there's federal legislation that's pending. We support that. We'll continue to support that. But in the interim, this is a step that the state can take to help out our businesses, and we strongly support the bill. Thank you.
Questions for Mr. Hesse or Ms. Larson? Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you comment? I mean, all the testimony is directed at retailers and the impact on them, but what about manufacturers, small and large, who do business outside of our state? What are they doing in this area, and how might this affect them?
Mr. Hesse?
Mr. Chair and Representative Runbeck, manufacturers would have a sale for resale exemption, so they're, if they sell a product to a retailer, there's, they have a resale exemption already. If they, sell products directly, they're audited all the time by the Department of Revenue for their use tax obligations. So businesses' use tax, filings are routine, and there's much better compliance on the business side.
Representative Runbeck.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm interested in the unintended consequences, and I think Ms. Dalton mentioned something about, changing standards of nexus, and I just, at some point, maybe we could hear more about that, but not today.
Certainly. Thank you, Representative. Is there anyone who has concerns about the bill that has driven from a distance? Because we would make... just for a lay of the land, how many folks here wish to testify with concerns on the chairman's bill? Just one? I mean, not just one. There's a very important one. But we will, I think I want to give you ample time, and I can't do it at this point. So we will, do you want to go now?
Why not? He's here.
Okay, we'll give you more time later, because that's, I want to be, at least appear to be fair. Okay. With that being said, what we'll do is we'll be adjourning here. Anything else from any members for the good of the cause? Not good government all the time. We're adjourned.